Today's speaker, Dr. Vishwesharaya Prakash, Director, Central Food Technological Research Institute, Mysore, who will be speaking on Interface of Food Science with Food Technology, a Paradigm Shift Towards a Safe Food. Dr. Prakash, born on November 23, 1951 at Mysore. He had his early education at Mysore and completed his master's and doctoral programs in the University of Mysore. During 1972, Dr. Prakash joined CFTRI and worked on seed proteins in the Department of Protein Technology at CFTRI. In 1976, he moved to Texas Medical Center at Baylor College of Medicine, Houston, USA. There he developed a number of advanced protocols for analysis of protein-protein interactions. Subsequently, he moved as a research associate to the Department of Biochemistry at Brandeis University, USA, where he worked on denaturation of protein and its mechanism, as well as on the protein-ligand interactions. Dr. Prakash returned to India during 1981 as pool officer of CSIR and started working in the Department of Protein Technology at CFTRI. Today, Dr. Prakash is known for his contribution on structure function properties of seed proteins, structure function properties of enzymes, as well as other food processing areas. Dr. Prakash has got several awards to his credit. To mention a few, in 1987, he has been honored with the Golden Jubilee Award for Science and Technology from the University of Mysore. He is also the recipient of Sharma Memorial Award for Society of Biological Chemists India during 1989 for his contribution in the field of biological sciences. In 1992, he received Lalji Godo Smarak Nidhi Award of the Association of Food Scientists and Technologists India for his contribution in the areas of food science and technology. Dr. Prakash has been elected as a fellow of the Association of Food Scientists and Technologists Mysore and Indian Academy of Sciences Bangalore. Ladies and gentlemen, may I now invite Dr. V. Prakash to deliver his talk. Dr. Prakash.
Dr. Raja Ramanna, very, very distinguished delegates today evening. It is my pleasure to be here, and I think it's also an honor to be here with all of you to share what I felt was a paradigm shift between the food technology and food science that what we see across. Let me confess myself that I myself am not a food scientist or a technologist. I'm basically an enzymologist with a background in proteins. But being in an institute like Central Food Research Institute for over 25 years, you also inherit, you hear a lot of talks from eminent people. At the same time, you also read, learn, and see things. And so what I would be presenting to you, it would be better, I personally feel that the perspective that I am proposing to you today is what I feel and may not be totally the opinion of a professional food technologist or a professional engineer or a scientist in the area of food technology. But however, I would like to raise a few questions today during the process of discussion and keep you thinking about it for a long time to come. And whenever you have answers, kindly let me know, because I would be the most happy person to know a few answers, which I myself have a lot of problems in getting the answers. So what I think is, in about, let's say 40 minutes, that's what I understand, I'll quickly and rapidly go through a few of my slides. Some of them may be very descriptive in terms of the contents of it, but some of them have a lot of information in them. I may not be able to read all of it, but I would rather highlight a few of them for the advantage. I chose this topic for two main reasons. One is, yesterday's problem was always food technology, originating at home and carrying onwards for the last about 500 years or so, when we say commercialization. But today, food technology without food science is just not possible, because we will have a lot of problem if we do not interface food science with food technology. Now the consumer looks at the safety of the food, and therefore I thought I would choose these three keywords: food science, food technology, and safe food. And hopefully I would try to marry all of them into each other's web at the end. So let us have the answer at the end, not at the beginning. Food is global. I think that's very important to realize. It is not regional. What we consider regional may not be regional. It is always global. So therefore, anything that we do in food has to be a global appeal. We also know today the processed foods are invading, and we would like to ask the question, how safe they are and how to do this processing of the foods in the most effective way with the marriage of food science and food technology. It is also important when we talk about food, affordability is a major point. A food that is not affordable may not be also tasty. So therefore, the cost of food is important for us to remember. A food like this would be a very good thriller in South India for most of us who stay here. But certainly, the element of safety, the element of authenticity, the element of the so-called touch of the mother or the touch of the wife or even the touch of the husband, whatever it is, has to be there in food. Food is not something like a subatomic particle, if I am allowed to say so, which is independent of a human being at this point of time. Therefore, food is something which comes through the man or the woman. So we should always remember there is something behind food, and that's very, very important for making this story complete. Harvesting, growing of food is also involved right from the beginning all the way to the consumer, and we should remember that. Today in our country, we do harvest in different ways. So the tomato soup, what you get in the end, may have a lot of bearing how it is harvested without your knowledge. So therefore, not always you have to blame your mother or wife for a very bad tomato soup. It's always there, somewhere behind. So therefore, the parameters in food, what I mean to say, is tremendously large. It is much more of a complex biological system in nature, and therefore we should worry about it. Transportation is another major problem that we have to worry about, because the tomatoes that have been somewhere here will be experiencing about roughly 5 kgs of weight on top of it all the way down. So you have almost a tomato squash by the time it reaches. So shelf life is gone. I would like to ponder over some of these points so that the cycle of the entire system of the origin of some ideas and how it comes to an institute like ours, maybe elsewhere also, I don't have to say it's always CFTRI, somewhere where food research goes on and food technology. Certain policies of the government is also a major factor for people in the area of food to work. That in turn goes to the technology and to the industry, which goes to the food products, and today it is the export market. But at the same time, we have the interaction with people who come back and feed us a lot of information, and I'm sure that fulfills the expectation. It is also vital, the human resource development has to cater to the industry and the problems and funds. Today is just beginning to flow from industry to research in a very massive way. Total support still is from major agencies like CSIR, DBT, DST, ICR, ICMR, etc. So therefore, the cycle of operation has to be kept in mind when something happens in the area of food science and food technology. Food is very powerful. The power of food is only known when you are very hungry, not otherwise. And therefore, the power of food is so much that very little thought many times we give it to that kind of an approach. So I would like to underline this word throughout my talk, that food is very, very powerful. In India, it is a very big industry right today. And why do we say so? Labor intensive and provides employment to a large section of population. Right now, this figure is about 8 months old. It's about 20% now, the national labor force, and an investment of about roughly 6.5 to 7%. The industry contributes to about 13% or so to the industrial production, which is on the rise. So therefore, economically, socially, it's a very, very important area. Agricultural products accounts approximately like 43% of the national product, could be slightly higher. But the 55% of the total geographical area of India, about 185-190 million hectares, is under cultivation. And therefore, this is our basis for any major planning in the area of food science and food technology. And we should keep that in mind. Today, we have grown horizontally. But I think tomorrow we should grow vertically in the production and so on. If you want a major, big challenge that is going to be discovered in the area of food science and technology, that has to be vertical growth, not the horizontal growth. Because we have achieved a large amount of these conditions, what we put forward about 20 years back in a horizontal transaction. But vertical transactions are very minimal. Like groundnut, we are number 72 in the world per hectare yield. But the area under the arable area under the groundnut is more or less saturated if you see the curve. So chances are very less that it will multiply further. The winds of change are already there in India in the area of food science and technology. As I said, it's about approximately 2% of the entire agricultural resources is what is getting processed in this country. It almost contributes to 35 to 38% of the GDP and approximately 64% of the entire Indian workforce into that system. Now, what does this really mean, this 2%? Do you mean to say that 98% is thrown out? Really not so. I'll just give you an example because this is often quoted by a large section of people without seeing the basic meaning behind it. Let us take fruits in this country. We have about 64 grams of per capita availability of fruits. At the point of 1.5% processing in this country, we have that figure available, fresh fruits. Suppose we double it, what you will be ending up with the population growth of the next five years or so is about roughly 20 grams. Now, if you make it 8%, trying to achieve what Malaysia has achieved, 80% processing, you would simply have minus 20 grams of fruit with you because of the problem of vertical growth. So therefore, it is vital that we keep that in mind when we say everything has to be processed. And the figure that we quote often, that a lot of food is wasted, has a meaning, of course, and with that wastage that what we are trying to prevent and not to completely process our system into packaged foods. It is vital. The paradigm is shifting towards fresh food today, and that's a very good sign for a large section of the population because it cuts down cost. Gross profit margin is about 10% or so. Not so important at this point of time. Societal changes leading to increased processed food consumption is the main driving force for the food industry to go towards it. This has resulted in a number of new joint venture projects in India, and this would hopefully, I'm using the word hopefully, improve the standard of food processing industry in the country with the underpinning of hygiene and cost factor. The value of processed foods approximately in the primary, secondary and tertiary sector is estimated to be about 400. This figure can be anywhere between 400 to 800. Really depends how you estimate it. Value addition in all forms could be around 180 or 170 million US dollars. One of the high growth industries of the current decade is the food processing industry in India. This is often quoted and is but true. India has a lot of favorable policy today, and we don't have to enumerate all of that. But I would like to get your attraction to the last sentence, an attractive market of India itself. That is very, very important. Because of the large population, so India itself is an attractive market. So every time we don't have to look for that export, because if we can do a wonderful job at a cost-effective nature and a food that is close to us from a traditional cultural point, I think we have a large market ourselves with ourselves. I'd like to quickly go through some of the production figures from 93, 94 to 94, 95. I've selected a few of them, not the entire gamut of list. If you just see something like rice, we haven't made much progress between 79 to 80 million tons. Today it is slightly higher than 95, 96 figure. Projection for 96, 97 is also in the marginal increase. Core cereals, marginal increase. Oil seeds more or less stagnant. In fact, it is started coming down at one point. Vegetables about 50 to 51. Now, if you look at something like spices, which is value added, is going up. Today, it's about 4 million. So, therefore, the trend in agriculture is a driving force towards value addition to certain agricultural products, which gives them more benefit. So, therefore, it is but natural we have to look back into this system and ask the question, can these figures be stagnant and still we talk about food processing? still we talk about varieties which we want for food processing? A very vital question. I have no answer, but I would like to raise this question with you. Vast resources in our country still remains unexploited. Thrust area for exports back with favorable policies, incentives and institutional framework are the guiding forces today for the food processing industries to come up. Incentives and schemes are large in number. I don't have to enumerate them. By the turn of the century, India's population is projected to be around 1 billion or so. Therefore, if we look at about 240 million tons of food grains that is required to feed about 1,000 million Indians, it's a mega problem. And that's what we might have to address over a period of time, which will be the primary sector of the processing, not the tertiary. When I say primary, I'm looking at the farm level, not the final product that is going to be done at the factory level. Therefore, the Indian government is in an absolute race against time, permanently promoting the food processing industry in one way or the other. Infrastructure is good, well-developed goods sector, well-developed transportation network, reasonably well today for various reasons, extensive network of banking facilities, all these helps in generating the so-called food processing industries. But if we want to go to that extra mile in the food processing, this infrastructure is not sufficient. So therefore, when we look at the food processing industries, we should look at the holistic approach of the society itself. I would like to quickly go through some of the agricultural processed foods. I have just given an example like in animal products and other processed foods. If you see the value in rupees, it's a big economic attraction. So anybody who has a little bit of money to invest, either through borrowing or his own, I think would be always attracted to the food industry because the value addition is very large. But it's also important to realize that it is very, very vital that the raw materials are available in plenty. Otherwise, you will have a lot of problems in a food processing industry because many times it is empirical food processing industry that survives and not the food processing industry that goes from the basic science. So therefore, it is very vital that this waxing and waning of many things closing down, opening up, is as a result of that. Locational factors are also important. Placing the wrong industry at the right place or the right industry at the wrong place can mean a lot of problems. The different sectors of Indian food processing industry today are the following. Fruit and vegetable industry. About 0.5% of the total world share with us. And I think the figure in 91-92 is about $51 million. But the point is, this has now gone up to like 150 or so. Now we are already in the top of the S curve at this point, I already told you. So when we reach the top of the S curve, we have to look for that quantum jump. What is it that we have been doing to reach that quantum jump? And that's a big question for all of us to answer. A potential area for investment, of course, but I'm sure this kind of a rise in the export market is not going to be forever. It's going to taper off, and that's where we have to worry very much what we'll do next. The production of the fruits and vegetables in various sectors like jams, squashes, pulp, etc. is more or less constant over a large amount of period, and therefore that also worries us why it is so with such a large market. So that's still a question mark. Export, of course, today more of fresh fruits and vegetables has taken up than the processed fruits, as you can see from the quantum. So therefore, do we expect that it will dwindle over a period of time? But there's a lot of technology involved in fresh fruits and vegetable processing also. It's not just you put a couple of mangoes in a small carton and just export it or send it away. A lot of science is there in it. Therefore, more importance is today is going for the fresh fruits and vegetables. Next is the grain processing. You also know that India is the second largest producer of rice and wheat in the world. And India produces and consumes almost 22-23% of the world's rice. A major impact. But you see, things like export of non-basmati rice, which I never heard in India, is picking up very rapidly today. So therefore, there is a lot more importance in this because of the ethnic population going around. There is a traditional practice of exporting basmati rice is a big question mark today. When you look at some of the processed food products in the grain sector, you still see the basmati rice going down during the 93-94, but the non-basmati going up. In fact, this year the difference is much higher. So therefore, the agricultural practices that have come up recently over the last, let us say, 8 to 10 years is paying the dividends now. So therefore, this raises one more question. There is a waiting period. It cannot take a leap jump all of a sudden. And that waiting period is a must because we are dealing with food. When you look at semi-processed and ready-to-eat foods, it's very vital. The Indian working women want this very much to reduce the drudgery at home and elsewhere. It is very, very vital also that people don't want the total processed foods, as we did a lot of market survey recently. They want semi-processed food because I don't think any processing system should steal the touch of a woman in cooking or the touch of a man in cooking. So semi-processed food, something is peeled and readily available, something is cut and readily available. And that kind of industry is now coming up rather than a total processed food which takes the flavor out of the person who really cooks it. Snack foods, coming up very large sector. Today about 55,000 bakery units in India and 90% of that is in cottage sector. It's also important that we know in this particular area of bread and biscuit, 72 to 75% of the customers are in rural sector. Very strange but true. Therefore, have you explored this possibility of driving it as a nutrition base to the rural? Question mark. Dairy sector is a very thrilling system today with the onset of the national dairy movement started by Dr. Kurian. But what is happening is the milk production has gone up very high. But have we really cashed upon the potential for products based on milk and its byproducts? We haven't. We are very happy we have a lot of fresh milk. But the question is how much of value addition to that fresh milk we are giving it. Very less, as a matter of fact. Poultry and meat, same problem. But today, I think the frozen poultry and poultry products are expected to reach almost something like about $9 million US dollars today during the current year of 95-96. And that's much less than what we can really have the potential, what we really have the potential. I think this potential has to be raised today in the meat and poultry and also in the fish products. In the fish, very little has been done recently and that itself is paying the dividends. So imagine a large amount of input and for 94-95, the projected figures were something like 1,000 million US dollars, but it almost crossed like 1,400. Projections were very low. So therefore, the potential today is of the order of about roughly crossing about 3,000 crores. And I'm positive a large amount of input into the fisheries, both inland, aqua, as well as processing, with a value addition and a safety margin, makes a lot of difference in the economic situation. Confectionery is another thing, all of us know that. But it is also very vital that when we talk about confectionery, chocolates, cocoa products, we also remember the soft drinks. The recent demand has been more so in terms of fruit juices such as guava and banana, which is a very big boomer because they are very traditional to India. They have a lot of inputs into the system. And I'm sure with the health aspect of food coming down, this should really click in a big way. But very less emphasis on this by any industry today, because there is a certain amount of apprehension whether it will move or not, as compared to an aerated water, for example. Ice cream is another big business in this country, and a lot of science behind it, because it's only recently that people realize that you can have an ice cream in your mouth without the mouth being frozen. All of us remember the high school or the middle school days where you put the ice candy inside, the whole mouth is frozen. You are numb for about 5 minutes. Today, ice creams don't do that because the whole crystallization process has been understood thoroughly and the milk, the lactose crystallization has been thoroughly understood and we can manipulate it such that it just gives the right kind of temperature in the mouth, even though it is below certain like minus 10 or minus 18. Beer and alcoholic beverages, we have a large number of breweries in the country. But look at here, right now the per capita consumption of beer is only half a liter per year. That's a big potential right there in terms of population. So I think there are huge potential areas which we can really explore, and that's where the interface of science should come today to make this happen. Other packaged foods, etc., right from the continued presence of the unorganized sector, we have to face it because a lot of food is being manufactured in the small scale industry. Many large MNCs are either in or seeking entry into the market, but that should not perturb so much at this point of time, because India has got this kind of an MNC system from time immemorial, and it has handled very effectively because of tradition and culture is what really, really takes into it. But I'm sure this would make something an eye-opener for many of our technologies to sharpen it further. I'm not going to read this, but I'm going to just indicate to you some steps taken by the government recently to promote agricultural exports in terms of minimum export price on basmati rice, pepper, guar gum, orchids and meat of sheep, goat and buffalo removed. So you see how the export market is developing, and every other day you find an ordinance from the Ministry of Food Processing Industries, and therefore the door is getting more and more widened every day. Industry in the food processing sector reserved for the small scale industry or the small scale sector is also very clear today. You really, in fact, ice cream did move to that, and there is a big move that it should move out of it and so on. But if you see all that, even wax paper comes under small scale sector. Corrugated paper boards, paper bags, paper cups and plates, even the bio plates that CFTR has made comes under that category. And that makes a lot of freedom for the small scale industry to make through the system, but they can never export because the quality is different. I'm not going to read this, but these are some of the foods of the future that's supposed to come in a big way, at least the unit operation, like the tertiary processed foods getting slow acceptance recently, ready to eat, extruded snacks, frozen RTE foods, sterilized bottle products, warm and eat foods, freeze dried foods, health oriented specialty foods. Stronger machine building industry should come through increased export of processed food is all what is looking for almost a 2020 vision in this country, and that has to be a holistic approach. It just cannot be a single window clearance. Unless you have a wonderful engineering system, you can't think of a wonderful food engineering system. And who is going to manufacture the food processing equipment? It is the engineer. And therefore, just like the aircraft industry, the sophistication should increase if you really look for a safe and hygienic food. I would rather skip this and go to why we call this a sunrise industry. I'm putting this in this slide again as a black and white slide. Is I would like to make you remember that it's a labor intensive and employment generation. And we cannot forget this when we look at the automation of the food industry. With the background material I gave it to you. Now, unless we look at this angle, and small scale industry almost covers about 70% of the Indian food industry, and any violation, any definition of the fulcrum changing at that point can mean a lot of problem. Just like the recent 400 tanneries got closed because of certain regulations, creates a lot of problems. And I think food industry can learn from all this and go for a holistic approach of even the pollution control from the food industries, so that tomorrow it's not a legal problem. Therefore, not only we are very happy it is a sunrise industry, I would say it is a troubled industry for the future, unless we look at a total holistic approach for the entire system. Export market is another thing that scares us, but we are also happy about it. Because what the Alfonso mango, what you get today may not be available 5 years from now, because there is a lot of export market. But mango tree doesn't come out in 1 day, 3 months like a paddy crop. You have to really plan 10 years from now for a mango orchard. So the number of fruits are much, much defined, well defined. So who is going to take care of those mango orchards? So big question mark. Investment opportunity is rising in India. And with this background, what should we really look for in future in terms of our plan and newer technologies, what a food scientist can interface with food technology to give a rather safe food? This question is, who is afraid of a heterogeneous automation structure in the system? In other words, what was earlier called as a one unit operation today is multiplied into a number of unit operations in a single industry, which gives the benefit. So the approach has been heterogeneous automation structure in the food industry. You also have heard of the food preservation by hurdle technology. Hurdle not to the consumer, but hurdle to the microorganisms. You set up several hurdles, like a roadblock and the road hump, for the microorganism so that it doesn't grow. And that can be pH, that can be temperature, that can be moisture, that can be another preservative in it, that could be a biopreservative, that could be another component in the food itself, which you would like to isolate and add it back. So therefore, this is coming up in a big way, and almost it is reiterated today, like combination of this can be very effective. Just the reduction of pH may not be sufficient. Reduction of pH and temperature may make a big difference. So hurdle technology is coming up. For engineers, it's not a new term. Maybe I'll skip that and go to. Now, when you come in terms of the fresh fruits, you see the volume of trade of different countries, what is happening today. And why I'm putting this slide is, we have a good opportunity today to promote some of our own fruits. Like Australia has been promoting kiwi very, very efficiently, even though the production of kiwi is very small. All of us know kiwi and Australia go together. Is it too much to ask from anybody that should Goa and India go together? Question mark. We haven't really projected ourselves as a national fruit and give all the importance, because no other country except Mexico grows Goa. We have a wonderful chance. But are we missing it? Is a big question mark at this point. So I think there's a lot of promotion that we can do in terms of these concepts. And the structure of the industry promotes us that. Number of freezing plants, big capacity, large in number. And pre-processing centers are also large in number. And frozen storage is also large in number. So we have no really major problem for the quantum of, for example, Goa to handle. It's not very difficult. But have we made a potential on that? The FPO licenses for many of the industries have been given as of 94. The numbers are of this order. But today, with these numbers, it is much more than any other country where such a processing is happening. So therefore, with the organized system that is already existing, there lies a big potential. Major fruit processing centers, India is figuring today very nicely. And today that figure, somewhere during 97, 98, is projected to be something like 12 or 14. So therefore, we have a tremendous potential when we stand with other countries, because India is almost number 2 in the world with 103 million tons of fruits and vegetables. And that's going to grow up vertically. That's growing vertically, because of a large amount of inputs. This is again the same slide that I put forward back, but one point I want you to remember here is, today a market for like mango pulp is decreasing as compared to like fresh mangoes, what you see there in the first table, fresh mangoes and mango pulp. So the order looks like in about 5 years there's not much demand for mango pulp. Everybody looks for fresh fruits and vegetables. So therefore, our paradigm is to shift today for fresh and safe foods and safe fruits. A simple example like apple, the fruit for more than just one application, if you look at it. You go through an apple juice system all the way down, and you always want to have some fruit juice and you're very happy about it. But the value addition in the industry is very little. And how do we do it? Like you can go through the pectin extract, you can get alcohol out of it. And you go to the colored apple extract, filtration, etc. You have a total apple extract which can be added to many other systems. So what I mean to say is a total holistic approach of a simple apple cider industry or an apple juice industry may mean a big. In fact, their main component could be this. And therefore, that kind of a total technology is what is vital today. Very, very vital. Similarly, processing of mango. All the way down, you go for steam peeling, crushing, destoning, and using a decanter. Today, hardly about 4 or 5 decanters in this country. Pasteurization, homogenization, you have concentration, etc. You have the concentrate, juice, and puree. If you're only looking for puree, you don't worry about the juice and concentrate. Today, we can use ultrafiltration down here. Go down and get a sparkling, clear mango juice. So therefore, the invasion of unit operations today is unlimited. And it's up to the food scientists and technologists to use it to make value addition to the system. This is a good figure of a decanter, which kind of crushes things and takes it out in a very, very efficient way. And it's an automated process. This is a very old original model which I have shown you, but today the more automated computer control systems are very efficient. Spices, if you go to next. Important, pepper, cardamom, ginger, turmeric, chilies, and we grow a lot. And therefore, we have a big potential in that to explore. When you look at the export, a large amount of export comes through pepper. And if you just focus on pepper, even today our major problem in pepper is the aflatoxin. Many of the consignments of pepper gets rejected for not being able to estimate aflatoxin at the port. And therefore, about a year back, we realized that, and a good kit for aflatoxin is now developed. Even the port authority can just do it themselves. Rather than sending it all the way, getting it rejected, it will never come back. So all such problems have been minimized today, trying to export, you know, raise the potential on the export. The structure of the industry is very nice. Spice oil and oleoresins have got about 12 units. And I'm proud to say about 7 of them have the CFTRI technology for oleoresin plants. So roughly about 64-65%. Spice powders about 24 organized. But you look at this figure on the spice powders, almost like every alternate house has that, in terms of about 16,000 or so units in the country, where you have the problem of big quality control. So therefore, this is another area where it requires a tremendous amount of input for an organized system to make it happen for export market. In the area of coffee and tea, very little plants in terms of organized sector of instant tea and instant plant, but the potential for cashew processing units has never been explored. We have always downgraded cashew to a large extent because it's corrosive. It has got a lot of tannins when you eat it. So I think that stigma, if you have a good processing system, can be erased. And that's another fruit like guava, which we have explored to a very small extent, like the fenny and so on. But I think much more to that. Even a health aspect of a tannin or a flavonoid in it makes a lot of difference for a drug industry. And we have not explored that. There is a good potential on that. Export is a big deal today in terms of coffee, tea and cashew kernels. But the fruit of the cashew, as I mentioned, is very, very neglected. And that has got a good potential. Grain processing is a very, very largely unorganized sector. Potential for production of value-added products from the grains is equally important. When you look at a blow-up of a wheat, you almost see where is the technology for grinding wheat. Very science in grinding wheat. You just put the wheat in the plate mill and you get the flour. But today, for a specialty product, like a cake, like a bakery product, like even an English muffin, you need to remove these by layer. And those of you who have time, who have visited CFTR, I have seen our mill, almost these 9 fractions can be peeled one after the other in the automated mill. Now, what is the result of all this? Now you have the germ somewhere. The germ contains vitamin E, tocopherol, very much value-added system. And it is also rich in lipase, needful for detergent industry. And each one of those has a special property for bakery products. So value addition is almost 6 times compared to the whole wheat flour. But today, that technology has to really perpetuate. And we should have specialty flours as a result of this science and technology interface. And that's what makes a lot of difference for value addition. But today, I think about 95 to 98% of the mills just make it a whole wheat florata, including the bran. So therefore, you have a great chance as an engineer or even as a major scientist in other field to even go through the system of each and every layer of wheat and ask the question to which product it really fits. There's a big science in this. We have just not explored it at all. And very few people have also explored this. Maybe I'll skip that and go to. I just put this because what was happening here has now been automated into an automatic system where the whole wheat flour is being manufactured and put across and ends up in a beautiful bakery products. But each one of these products has to have a different character altogether. And that should come from the same wheat without any additives. That brings us back to fish, which I talked to you. Vast resources, again, but it is important that thrust for exports backed with favorable policies, incentives and institutional framework today exists. And therefore, it is a very, very major area for us to do a lot of research. We have about roughly 45 lakh tons of fish produced in 93-94, this has gone up to like 64 and on today in 95-96. And so it's just increasing together. Major exports for frozen shrimp, for example, which also has a major market today, happens to be Japan, small country, but all of our exports of shrimp goes to that country. But you also remember that shrimp, when you freeze it and when you thaw it, you lose a lot of water, what is called as a drip loss. Roughly about 15% drip loss is there when you thaw it. But why should we worry about the drip loss? All the contents of the nutritional content of the shrimp is lost. What the Indian industry today is doing really is adding an extra shrimp of about roughly 200 grams. Pack a 1.2 kilograms and label it as 1 kilogram. And when the other side opens, it is 1 kilogram. What is it due to? If you really explore that, we took up a major project on the basic research on that. We did find the structural proteins got altered. So we had to use specific dip treatment of salts to prevent it. And today, the patent that we have on that is absolutely a different story altogether. Hardly about 2% drip loss. So they just add 1 kilogram and that's it. So the interface between food science and food technology, I just gave an example, can be tremendous, provided we go to the basics of it and ask the question. And that's where institutions like CFTRI and even other institutions like Indian Institute of Science has a major role to play to ask that basic question. And that we are capable of. You probably repeat the same figure, but that's for the 92, 93 and 93, 94. Test fishing is something which we don't do in our country, and I think we should do it. Because time and again, we go into the shore and assume that the same raw material is available, and this we are not. We have also not kind of leased foreign vessels in a large extent. Rather than waiting for some vessel to be built here, we lose time. So today we have a good system on that. When you look at the export of marine products, you just see how it is rising. And today it has crossed about 30,000, roughly. And I think the way it is going, this is one industry that can really bring in all the revenue, provided we focus on the safety aspects of it. Just like the US story of somebody shakes a tuna and the mercury drops down, and the whole market fell down, that should not happen. And when that happens, the whole thing will collapse. And therefore, a lot of preventive action is necessary here, because these are all nature, bountiful resource, raw material. Can I have the next one, please? I wouldn't take more than another 15 minutes. Is that okay, Dr. Ramani? Yeah. When you look at the estimate of the inland water resources, we have a bountiful amount number of rivers and very less is utilized on that. So I think major emphasis today is given by the MPDA and also the other agencies on the fisheries aspects, both for the agricultural system. Poultry, another attractive thing, very, very underexplored system. And in fact, the largest cattle population in the world, but comparatively low meat production. Ban on cow slaughter in most states and national ban on beef exports has caused a lot of problems. Few large corporate players in this. Absence of meat growing players is almost zero at this point. Large potential for scientific slaughter facilities and cold chains not existing. Potential for developing the market to ready to cook and ready to eat products and the meat system is missing. As I said, when you look at the milk products, we also have a steady growth of milk production, but the potential for investment in value added products such as ghee and kova and even dehydrated milk like a milk powder has tremendous potential. Very less is being done. Milk production, something like a large quantity what we are dealing. But look at cheese, condensed milk, ghee even, malted milk food, etc., low volume. And these have to be really pushed up today. But we have problems of rennet with cheese. But today, after a great deal of work, a good rennet has come out. And hopefully that would offset and make the cheese available to a larger, because that's a very costly process. And secondly, those people, many people who eat cheese, have a kind of a flavor of vegetarianism, and rennet comes from a non-vegetarian source, or from a cow or an animal. So therefore, there is an apprehension on that. So can you have a microbial rennet? Yes, the answer has been good, and today that has been possible. The structure of the industry, you see the dairy cooperatives, which dominates the whole show, and that has been a great success. But you see the other systems, like condensed milk products, very little. So when we reach a figure like 90,000 million liters of milk, we will have large problems of the raw material. So therefore, these things have to really grow up today if we have to visionize that one. Oilseed is another area which we need to worry today. All these oil seeds, at one point of time, we never heard of safflower and sesame, sunflower and so on are coming up. But the one thing that really attracts our attention is soybean today. So we can do a lot on that in the value addition to the cake, because oil is the economic factor, but cake is being underutilized. A massive study from our institute did a wonderful job of making a protein hydrolysate from the oilseed meals, which really value adds almost like 100 times. But the fact is, some of these oil expellers are all kind of small scale. They can't manufacture a protein hydrolysate, so you need to harvest them and take it to a common place, and that makes a lot of difference in value addition. I know of about 8 processing industries in India who extract oil for the cake, because that's a lot of value addition. Structure of industries, again, Ghanis are overpowering than the other units. The oil mills are there, but the expellers are also large in number. You see. But
they are traditional Ghanis.
Right, they are traditional Ghanis and power Ghanis.
Aren't they going out to
Ghanis? They are not actually, that's what we think. But in fact, their number was something like almost like 3.2. And today they are coming down, but the figure is not that low. It is still there. It is still existing.
The village is going on.
Right, it's going on. It's still there. But the numbers are decreasing positively, yes. Oxidation is another problem in oils. We all know that. And that can totally derail even the best ideas. Could be for a soap industry. The beer industry, if you call the alcoholic industry and so on, major sources of revenue to comment, but wine demand with high profits and the problem of illicit distillation and all has made this a totally different thing. We don't have good trained brewers and distillers today. So somewhere in the year 95, we took a decision to have a school for international school of malting and brewing, and that's coming up, but the demand is very large. So in other words, it looks like an organized sector, but still looks like a family sector, and there's a lot of potential in it to explore and train people to that industry. Structure of industry is very, very limited, and I'm sure there is scope for expansion in this area. This is the statistics of the basically on the liquor and malt and water, what I wanted to show you. But apparently, this number can almost triple in about 5 years if we have sufficient number of trained people. Our production quantity is also very less in beer. Soft drinks is about 3,000 million bottles and liquor about 600 million bottles. This figure of 3,000 million bottles is rising up every day. And that's where if we interface with fresh juice, maybe we begin to tend to gain a lot. Export, very less export in both sectors. It's almost negligible. What is 22,000 liters? Nothing. Other packaged foods have a lot to say in the system. And the highest growth potential is in the convenience, the food segment. And I'm sure with this kind of a field itself is another area for a massive investment. New frontiers in food technology. I'm going to go rapidly on this because these are big titles. I just would like you to kind of remember it. One is supercritical fluid extraction for milk fat, fractionation, scale-up and economics, where the extra milk can be used. Low-fat, low-cholesterol, egg yolk in food applications. Very, very vital. Micro-encapsulated marine omega-3 fatty acids, with a large amount of marine systems for use in food industry, health aspect, drug aspect, pharmacy aspect. The contribution of the plant food antioxidants to human health, such as curcumin, turmeric, with halvi, what we call in Canada, we call arishna. Progress in food dehydration has been tremendous, and very little has come to our country because still we look at a very, very uneconomical way of drying. So I think solar dryers, even microwave utilization has been very less. Good potential. Encapsulation system for flavors and colors. Even to the last drop of coffee, you would like to have a lot of flavor. But many times that can only happen with a time delayed release, just like the microencapsulated drugs, which gets released with time. Using modern technology and using modern science can make a lot of difference in the processing. And what I would like to show you here is the same raw material done in several different processing aspects can lead to a very, very different food, and we need to look at it at a molecular level. Otherwise, the answers are very empirical, the solutions will be empirical, and I think the collapse can be sudden sometimes if you don't have a firm basis. Membrane filtration, I mentioned to you, for juices, oils, etc., very vital. Newer approaches in the production of foodstuffs and intermediate products from cereals and grains and oil seeds is very, very vital, especially the intermediate products, not the final products of oil. Genetic engineering, I'm sure there are a couple of molecular biologists here, is the designer gene for the 21st century in the plants is very, very vital. Acceptance of a transgenic plant is still a question mark because we don't have regulations in this country. In fact, we should start worrying about it because it's going to be at the corner anytime. The potential of a simple thing like a dielectrophoresis for the real-time detection of microorganisms in the foods should be at the port authority, question mark. We just have to worry about it. Every sample need not come to CFTRI or to some other institution traveling all the way. Simple techniques should be available at vital points to make things happen. Combination process in food irradiation. Today, the health authorities have cleared food irradiation, but we are doing very less about it to make customers feel about it. Like many of you have gone to UK have seen, an irradiated food is placed next to a fresh food, and it's your choice, the customer's choice. I think that's very important. Let the customer decide and not impinge upon him. Perspective in textural evaluation in plant foods is very vital, and because texture is something that is coming back today, like a meat analog and so on. Immunological assays for mycotoxin detection, absolutely unexplored area. And how do we do it in a rapid way is the question. It may take 3 days in the lab, but that's not what it is, a rapid way. Multivariate data analysis in sensory and consumer science and overview of development is very important. And not just, for example, the sensory data and the instrumental data have to be correlated to it. And all these days we are worried about that and worried about that. Today we have to use a lot of interface to do that. Instrument to improve your profits through better process and quality control. Absolutely necessary. Product optimization in a three-dimensional network where you know that when you have a minimum situation there, you have a total control on the pH temperature and the antioxidant content of a food, particularly in this case, like an oil. Three-dimensional structure of enzymes, proteins, macromolecules has to be today a part of food technology and food science. It is going on, but I think we have to worry about the genetic manipulation and also at the same time at a level where we can optimize. In fact, recently in Mysore, we had an IPR symposium where I just gave an indication of an enzyme called transglutaminase. There are roughly about 800 patents on one enzyme, all in food technology and food science. And therefore, how did that happen? All happened at a molecular level because we understood that, and therefore there's a lot of potential. So basic science simply can turn over the whole thing, provided it is goal-oriented and product-oriented. A simple thing like this, since this is coming to more my field, I'm just giving you an indicator, like the linear free energy of a molecule, either from a fluorescence data or so, and the transverse free energy of transfer 110, makes a lot of difference for a thermodynamics man. But for food technologies, it may not mean much. But to interpret this in a product formation is what means a lot of difference. It can save him a lot of money in the processing sector. Just the two subunits of a protein interacting can make a gel, and they can just stay there even at high temperature by hydrophobic interaction. And therefore, that kind of an interface is what may be very essential today. Simple thing like tubular heat exchangers, these are very, very widely used in wastewater treatment, food and beverages, fermentation, chemical industry. Liposomes, for example, not explored at all in food industry in this country. And that is very vital. It's a wonderful technology where you have an air, like the water and the liposome molecule, almost mimicking many of these systems. And what a wonderful area we have. We have expertise, but the application to food technology is very minimal. Because food technology is supposed to be an empirical situation. So what I'm driving home the point is, we can incorporate a lot. Solid fat is what we are looking for future. Like the N3, what is dry N3? It's just an oil which pours as a powder. It's not difficult. If you go through the whole system of a food starch layer, a gelatin and sucrose, oil droplets, microatomize and put it together. So you have the oil inside those droplets. solid fat, powder. So I think, you see, the potential is tremendous. You can load anything inside that, depending upon what you want. Application of lipases, for example, can be tremendous. They have very little explored on these things, such as on the production of fatty acid, food and feed use. In the feed use, animal food, feed use, we don't use lipases. Continued on that, leather industry and lipase, hydrolysis, very vital. We have not explored that. The nutraceutical revolution, its impact on food industry is very vital. What we called as nutrition, it's a pharma, is what is nutraceutical. And today it is coming up in a big way. And India is very rich in it. And I think there is a lot more for you to chew as scientists and technologists with the background of humanity, because this makes a lot of difference in our ancient literature. And we are loaded with it. Natural colors has stable future is a big question mark, because availability is not there and we don't know the stability of them. Development of a model food science program for even high schools. Have you thought of that? It's always assumed that food science and technology is at home and not a curriculum at all. Why should it be like? Who is to ask this question? And I would like to ponder over that question mark for a while. Database in many of these things is very important, and today one of the largest databases in CFTRI and food science and technology. And therefore, such databases are to be created in plenty elsewhere to make things happen. Quality is another important thing. When quality comes, you're always blindfolded. You don't know which one is better. You always go by the taste and the color and the attractiveness. But there must be better parameters today to decide the quality. Shelf life, it's time to get the facts. We don't know when we take an apple how long it stays in the outside or inside the fridge. So it's very important to get the real facts on shelf life. I'd like to go in the next 3-4 slides about my institute, because I'm indebted to it, because I work there. I have a selfish attitude of presenting my institute. It's a old palace, but to retain that as a palace is very difficult. But today there's no laboratory here, most of the offices are here, and the objectives are the following. I'm not going to read all this, but one of the important factors is to develop a human resource in food technology area. We train about closely 1,000 food industries per year, plus we also train about 150 PhD students. And that's a large number, and today the basic input is very large. And it's also important for us to provide an R&D assistance and consultancy services to food industries, especially the small scale. There are a number of departments, and all these departments are supported by a number of other support departments, and these work in synergy to talk to each other. Various technical services like analysis, HRD, information and database, technology dissemination through various means, technical and aid to industry, pilot facilities. Today, industry come to our institute to use the pilot facilities on a rental basis. That's where the marriage takes place. Sample production and supply, job works. And to give you a brief, about 12 to 13 new technologies are developed every year. About 50 new enterprises every year using CFTRI technologies. More than 10 new patents a year, train about 24 food technologies, etc. We also have a big international course on the system. Conclusions would be, I'd like to just quote, I'm not going to conclude anything on these things, because one of the quote by Bill Grimm says that the wet markets are strong in Hong Kong, controlling about 90% of the total fresh food, although I suspect this figure will slip. So the emphasis is on fresh foods. It's very vital. The management of retail stores now have access to detailed sales information which they have had in the past. This will accelerate the growth of chain stores, cookie cutter style. You open one store, the next one is the same. Protocols and the monotony of these things. I think this is very important that we should not fall into this kind of a trap at this point. There will always be room for both large and war runs or corner stores in Indonesia, for example. This is one of the a big person from the Indonesian supermarket. Each retail format fulfills a specific need. So we get into speciality when we go into marketing. That's very, very vital. Population in India is very critical for us. Still, we see people cooking in this fashion. And that's what some of us have to worry. And that's very important to us. And every project of ours, we have to keep the human face, without which I think we will have a lot of problems to face tomorrow. Because once you leave science and sit back in an easy chair, you ask the question, what did I do to a person like this? Very less answer you have. Tradition is a strong system in India. We can't forget in food technology and food science. A simple thing like using a copper vessel has a lot more role to play in tradition and science. So finding out the science in tradition is equally important for us. Combination of foods. Fruits were exported by air earlier, and today everybody wants by ship. And therefore, we should treat them very nicely with a good easy chair and make them feel that they are the kings and we are serving them. Time is running out, I know. Therefore, I would like to close my talk with this final slide with me, that this tree, to my knowledge, has taken about 12 to 13 years to grow. And in it, all the food science and technology is also growing. So there is what is called a time lapse. A growth time is always there for all the projects. So we can't expect miracles to happen overnight in science. And therefore, we have to be patient. Hopefully, that patience would give us a very safe food in future. Thank you very much. I exceeded my time by about 10 minutes. I'm sorry about it. Thank you.
Ask questions of the speaker. Now, for most people, food means eating. But I think the lecture today has shown you what a wide spectrum of activities it involves. And I'm sure you have plenty of questions. And before I make any comments, I request you to ask. Yes, please.
Colors and flavors. I'll tell you. The reason why I put a question mark there is, today we do not have a technology to stabilize the natural colors. That's the biggest problem we have. Secondly, the amount that we have to add is tremendously large to get the color. And thirdly, when it is exposed to light, the stability of the natural food colors and flavors are very less. Because the system has evolved in such a way that with a synthetic color, you add in parts per million, you get the color. Here you are dealing with 1% or 2%. And that is enormous quantity. Cost is unbelievable. I can just give an example. You want to make a strawberry jam. You have to add a certain amount of color to that. If you add a synthetic color, the cost of the color is hardly about 5 paise per 200 gram bottle. But if you add a natural color, it will be 50 rupees per that bottle. Now, you know, as long as that cost is there, nobody is going to use it. So therefore, we have a challenge in front of us to make that work. And that's what I said. Unless we answer the question of stability and cost, so that will not take off. But as a matter of fact, in 6 months of time, synthetic colors are going to be banned. We have no alternative. Actually, we have to run around. This is a small extension that the government has given us again. So I think I should have no hesitation in agreeing more than what you say. I'm with you.
Dr. Kocher, there are the research
after we look at an import of technology, we have to look at the money part also. I'm sure, I wish I could have brought a few slides of last week what I said. Germans are very good in patenting. You know, a small improvement of 1% is patented. So imagine the royalty you are going to pay to such patent. It's very, very difficult. So therefore, it's not that easy when we talk of importing technology. We should also be supported by finance. Therefore, it has to be. I think you raised, three valid points. But I'm afraid I will not be able to answer the first question, where does the capital come from? Because I have no answer how a multinational gets its capital. Yeah. Right. So I'm just coming to that. So once we look at that point, there are two or three aspects in food processing. For example, destoning of rice. We all remember that 30, 40 years back, the rice had to be screened for stone every day. Today, I think it is almost history behind. And who is responsible? I'll tell you, it is the unorganized sector. There are roughly about 75,000 destoners in this country. And that destoner was developed by CFTRI. But you know one thing we did, we didn't patent it. The reason is, let it go across. Let it go through a horizontal transaction. So on the other hand, when you say capital, one could have patented it. And only two or three people could have made all the system. So therefore, it is the way we look at things and the way we propagate is very important. I'm just giving that example to answer the first question about the unorganized. We can help a lot if we think a lot in the unorganized sector. The second one is the self-sufficiency and underfed. I did mention in my slide very pinpointedly, we look at the export when there is excess, not otherwise. As I gave the example of the fruit production and the processing, probably we reach the pinnacle of about 2.5-3% fruit processing. Beyond that we cannot, because the local market is very essential for fruit. So therefore, there is a self-limiting step in each one of them. And I am positive, when we look at the buying capacity, it is also increasing every day. The so-called common man can today afford a little bit more than what he was able to afford 10 years back. So certainly, the underfed is something which we need to worry. Therefore, the nutrition system, the total overall system of the availability of the basic ingredients has to be kept in mind at any point of time when you say value addition and export. I certainly agree with you 100%, not more. Now, we also worry about the export. And in the export, I think what is very essential is the value addition that we look forward, which we don't get it here. For example, lychee fruit. Today, last year, not even one fruit was available in the country. Everything got exported to Australia. The story may be same in mango 5 years from now. So therefore, there has to be a certain amount of agricultural horizontal transaction to grow more. And that, you know, in macroeconomics, is the induced agriculture. When once you value add, there will be an induced agriculture, and therefore that will come up, hopefully. And that may answer part of the question. I don't have an answer, very honestly, to that question.
Yes, sir.
I didn't get your question. Why we should import the technology? This is not only true of the food technology, but in all other sense. We have capacity for doing many things, but we still import. So food technology is one such, which also does that. But I would like to share with you a lot of examples, and one of them is, you can import a technology. You can manufacture a food which is not familiar to us and make it familiar in a 15-year period by advertisement and so on. But what is very important is the tradition point of view and the culture. It is very difficult to break that. Now, if you have a very, very inefficient drying system, a dryer being manufactured by an Indian manufacturer, where you lose 50% of the energy, let us say, in drying a carrot, is there anything wrong in importing an equipment which saves you that 50% of energy? I mean, I'm just asking this question. So I think let us take the advantage wherever it is essential and use it to the system, rather than thinking that no import of food technology should come to this country. I'm looking at a very holistic approach. But when we look at new foods and newer varieties and so on, I'm sure the consumer is a very smart chap in India. It is very difficult. I'm not going to name any company, but certain new breakfast systems didn't catch up that easily. We still go back to our idli, dosa and soji and so on. Why is it? We should have shifted everything to one breakfast. Should have been a national breakfast. But we are very smart. They are very, very smart people. It is very difficult to take care of the Indian consumer. In fact, many of the multinationals have this problem. They can't read our mind. We go once and that's it, many times. If it is not good, we retract. So therefore, ultimately the consumer is the king. And he decides what is good, what is bad. But certainly, it's very difficult to prevent any import of technologies. That's a policy matter. That's a policy matter of all fields, not only of food technology. It can be even a computer chip. It's true. I think you have put a very interesting question. But I think, to my knowledge, we are eating okay in India, because there are no starvation deaths as I hear. At least, to my knowledge, there are no starvation deaths. There may be malnutrition. But there are no starvation deaths in this country. So therefore, even if all of us eat double our quantity what we are eating, of course there is a physical limitation and those things. I'm sure it's not going to be a major problem provided the population is constant. The denominator is a very large figure. And that's where you need to pack nutrition, you need to be I'd like to just add to your point. Why do you imagine that nothing has been done? Why do you imagine that nothing has been done in those five areas? Right. But I'll tell you, 1955, we were losing about 80% of the onions. And today our loss is only 22%. And so we are doing it. But you see, we have a mass which is not educated. He harvests, he sees the clouds. In a hurry, he harvests today morning and gets wet. Within 1 week, the onion sprouts, he loses. Now, therefore, there is a lot of holistic approach in the society that we need to worry. It's not just giving a process to somebody, but also a rises potential of education. So, therefore, it is a total approach that will help in the end. Not just a small technology to be given. Because you see the number of entrepreneurs. Everybody grows onion not as a big deal, but as a stopgap arrangement. So he grows a small amount in 1 acre, brings it to the mandi, and he dumps it and goes back. So such things will ultimately create that problem of loss. But today, we have the potato anti-sprouting system. We have the cold base for potatoes. And the potato that you buy is not the new one that you get from the field. It's already stored for a while.
Can I add to that, my position for storage through irradiation, which you referred to in your lecture. But the time it has taken and the organization necessary for this, which could be at that time from our calculations, make a tremendous impact, but has not taken place. Why is this going to continue into the next century, or will there be a greater pressure from you in the field to use radiation? Because from everything that was said at the time, that was quite safe, and foreign countries have been using it for years.
But today, the primary processing is getting a lot of importance. See, the demand for a farm dryer for groundnut is tremendous today. In fact, most of the groundnut harvesters today are using a farm dryer. Otherwise, they just cannot dry the groundnuts at all. And in fact, they prefer a farm dryer than a tractor. But in Gujarat, if you go across, every groundnut field has a farm dryer. So that is itself building up. But you see, who is going to give the money for that? See, everything is intricately linked. Okay, you may have a good technology for a farm dryer, but how do you make him buy that? So you need to have a good program to kind of circulate the information and so on. So all this means, again, shift over of crops for economic thing. He's not going to worry about buying a dryer. Because his job is just to sell it off today. And then it is stored in a wrong place. High moisture, high temperature, aspergillus flavor starts, aflatoxin comes in, problem. So therefore, I think you have a very valid point when you raise that. But I would just like to give a small correction that the losses are not 30% today. Today the losses are much, much lesser. And the losses, you know, we feel very comfortable when you put a 1 kilogram of potato or onion into a refrigerator. But that's not true in the market. The market is open. You know, how do you really bring that? The only answer to me is the cold chain system. Cold chain is a very costly process because you can build a cold chain. But when you look at the transportation, our transportation is all in trucks without any refrigeration. So when you pump 5 tons of potato to another place, it goes in open air. So here we have a total economic scenario where capital intensive, all the system has to work towards it. So unless we look at a total picture, the losses cannot be zero. It can be minimized and it is happening, but it should happen in a much faster rate. Absolutely. So gave opinion about food irradiation, got into a controversial situation. So I don't want to be in that place, but I can tell you the scientific status as of today. See, food irradiation is cleared in all the advanced countries. The problem of food irradiation is the correct dosage to be given. That's very, very vital. That means your controlling panels have to be perfect. You can't take a risk on that because you're dealing with high energy. Now, two things are happening around the world in food irradiation. Number one is the consumer sees that he is getting educated and he feels it is safer. And in fact, it is safer for the two simple reasons. all the side effects that were shown earlier were either not reproducible for various reasons, or it was done under very high doses. Today I told you, in the hurdle technology, you can compensate 5 different parameters and not give that high dose. That's why I married put irradiation with other techniques. Like, you can give 1/10 the dose when you reduce the pH. You don't give that 10 times the load. So therefore, when you combine these processes, you are dealing with a low dose, which is absolutely safe. As a matter of fact, when you irradiate potatoes for prevention of sprouting, you are getting the same, you are giving the same dose to potatoes as you are getting from sunlight. So the system is pretty close to safe. But there is an apprehension with the consumer that there is something wrong with it. But I would also like to tell the other point, that today food irradiation is used in a very different way in agriculture also, as you see, which is also very important. We cannot forget it. High yielding, less insect resistant, and so on. In 54 amended act, which is now under total force, there must be certain minimal count of salmonella. Okay, so when you load it in Bombay, the minimum count is there. Now, because of the very poor packaging material, the moisture starts entering and the salmonella starts growing. So therefore, when it is unloaded, you have a different story. So it's all fine when it is taken out. So therefore, that's why I wanted to mention that packaging is very essential. The good packaging is absolutely essential.
No, not really, because it's a very pleasant duty to thank the speaker for this very interesting lecture. Interesting, I say, it's not just a common word, because many people don't speak on the subject of food very often. As I said, they're more interested in eating and criticizing the quality of the food. But what this technology, new technologies that was described to us today, can do to this process of processing of food is fantastic. Now, I belong to an age group where famines were common, and particularly recall the famine in Calcutta in the early 40s. Of course, I think people got to know about the famine because it was in Calcutta, but I think many other places was just as bad, but people took no notice. I just seem to guess that, but it wasn't mentioned as such. But since then, the word famine, as the speaker rightly mentioned, is a distant affair, and India is thinking of exporting food, as it should have, with all the resources that we have. But I am particularly happy because Dr. Prakash has taken over the CFTRI, and one can easily see there's a new dynamism, because the country was ready for it, though the laboratory was started a long time ago. And it was my pleasure that I was present on the day of the foundation ceremony. And it was a very interesting ceremony, because that great freedom fighter, who is now forgotten unfortunately, and should not be, Rajagopalachari, Raja Jay as he was known, was inaugurating the food technology place, and he started off with a parable or symbol which he used to be very fond of saying. That was his style of speaking, and that was, if a cow can eat grass and give you milk, you should be able to do something similar, or something he said, which was very topical and very. It moved us all very much, and there was a very large number, because Mysore at the time didn't have much entertainment, and they all came to see Rajaji. But still, I have something against Mysore, a city I love very much, and they have converted to a beautiful place, which I saw only recently. And they have renamed a circle known as Rajaji Circle with some other person's name. And I think that was a wrong thing to do, because it merely shows the weakness of our feeling for history and for the people who have done so much for the country. Be that as it may, I think the food technology is a most important subject, and I'm glad the CSIR is giving me a special place. At one time we thought, well, what is it? grandmother knew how to make pickles. These people are telling, teaching us how to make pickles. But when it comes to industry, export, and now with the patent fights that are going on, it amazes me as to what is happening in the world about knowledge not being easily available. I think the old Tagore's poem always referred to where knowledge is free, and that seems to be under great stress, and everybody seems to accept that that's the only way to become rich, and richness is the only criterion that matters. We were discussing all this a few days ago in his institute, and it was delightful to be in the old palace, which it happens that Dr. Prakash belongs to Vantikoppal, and I am an old resident of Vantikoppal. So whenever I go there, I feel particularly nostalgic. But to have him here and talk to all of us very, in a very comprehensive manner, covering all fields of knowledge connected with food technology and its new problems. Dr. Prakash himself is a fundamental scientist, and therefore he brought in the element of what the basic sciences can bring. So the CFTRI has a very interesting program of great value for the future, and I'm glad he brought all this to our attention, and I thank you very much on your behalf, on behalf of NIAS, that he was able to come and deliver this lecture. Thank you very much.